millions a year does Grenada give up? We don't know. You understand me now? How many millions a year does Barbados give up? We don't know. So the most important part of the arrangement, the deepest part of the arrangement, and the reason that the whole thing takes place, is invisible. So we have a world that is seen, and the world that is seen is the politicians on TV giving speeches, whether it was Mr. Pandey with Tobago Hilton, or Dr. Rowley with the current proposal, and so on. At the end of that, we have a building. So we have Tobago Hilton, and we have Hyatt in Port of Spain, and we have Trinidad Hilton up by the Savannah, yes? But what about in between? In between is the underlying commercial arrangements. And without those underlying commercial arrangements in place, nothing takes place. And as educated people, we've had 60 years of public education in this country. As educated people, we need to focus our mind on what is important and disregard what is merely interesting.
Where is the fire?
Yes, brother, I think that's a great place for us to begin.
Okay.
You know, we're talking here about the biggest, one of the largest, according to Sandals themselves, one of their largest ever resorts.
Yes.
And certainly the largest for Trinidad and Tobago.
Yes.
And you have talked very clearly about us taking an approach to this issue where we don't focus on what is interesting, but what is important. Tell us what is important.
Right. Well, the main thing that is important in this respect, and what I'm campaigning for people to get an understanding of, is what I call the underlying commercial arrangements. Because the underlying commercial arrangements are what drive a project like this. If those arrangements work out and they're balanced, an investment is made and a new project is built, whether it's a hotel or an office building or a marina or housing. If the arrangements aren't in place, the development cannot take place. And what is happening here is that we have, as you said, Chewbacca, we have a huge development. For Sandals themselves, Sandals is one of the top two hoteliers in the whole Caribbean, and it's the biggest project Sandals would ever have been involved in. So Sandals themselves were saying 2 weeks ago in the press that is the biggest project they were ever involved in. In the case of Trinidad and Tobago, the application that was made on the 13th of November for the CEC, Golden Grove Buku Limited, which is a state enterprise, made an application for CEC, a certificate for environmental clearance from the Environmental Management Authority. That application was for a complex of 925 rooms.
Indeed.
In two resorts, 25 restaurants, and so on and so forth.
Just to put that yeah, into some kind of perspective,
sure,
first.
Sure.
900.
And let's put that in context, because the biggest resort in Trinidad and Tobago is the one in Tobago we used to call Tobago Hilton. We now call it Magdalena Grand. That is a little less than 200 rooms. So it's four times bigger than the biggest one we've got.
Yeah.
So for us in Trinidad and Tobago, it's easily the largest, head and shoulders and waist of anything else. And for Sandals themselves, it's their largest. Therefore, irrespective of whether one is a PNM supporter or UNC supporter or a Tobagonian who wants the best thing for Tobago, or whether in fact one is somebody like myself trying to have a critical overview of the thing, irrespective of any of that, one has to approach something of this size with a certain amount of caution and skepticism, because in fact the quantity of the thing, the size of the thing, denotes a certain amount of quality. Just to pluck something from Leninism back in the day, the quantity of the thing would actually ascribe a certain amount of quality to the discussion.
Right,
the size of it is giving us a certain amount of
now,
quality.
A lot of people have raised the issue, you know, issues are being raised of, you know, how it'll impact the environment, to how many times the steel pan will play in the hotel per week. You know, how
pepper sauce,
so you are going through how much pepper, local pepper sauce will be
sold,
used, and so on. But how much, you are saying that, you know, we have to separate, you know, what is interesting from what is critically
important.
Which is
vital, yes.
And you're saying that perhaps we're not looking in the right places.
No,
we're not.
Sure, and I'm glad for the opportunity to do so. So thank you again. What I want to say is that a project of this size, the application that was made to the EMA by the Golden Grove Buku Limited, was made, and I think the application disclosed an estimated cost in the region of $2.7 billion. Sandals approached bankers in Wall Street last year. There was reported in Bloomberg on the 19th of July last year, 2017, that Sanders was proposing to borrow $500 million to build a resort in Tobago. We haven't heard any more about Sanders borrowing the money, but the head of Sanders at the time was Adam Stewart, Butch Stewart's son, and he was telling Bloomberg that they need to borrow about $500 million to build a resort in Tobago. So we have a kind of an idea that is about $3 billion that have to be spent to design and build the structure. Yes, mm-hmm. Therefore it's a huge complex. Yeah. We therefore need to be clear in terms of how we approach this. We therefore need to be clear in terms of what are the returns for the people of Trinidad and Tobago, because what's happening in this project Shabaka, like the other three state-owned hotels that preceded the Sandals project, mm-hmm. is that in fact the treasury is paying to build and design the project, and in fact a hotelier is coming in to operate the project. Yes.
Yeah. So you said just now that they went to Bloomberg looking for this money.
Yes. Yes. They went to Wall Street.
They didn't get the money.
No, I don't know that they didn't get it, but it was reported. It was reported last year that they were discussing in Wall Street. This is Sandals.
Now you stated publicly that there are two models for.
Yes, there are two models.
One is the TNT model. You described the TNT model.
Yes.
And the other one is the model that is used by
the rest of the Caribbean countries
that don't have the kind of money we have.
Yes.
Like, explain that.
Well, in fact, the other Caribbean countries that want to attract a hotelier to put up a hotel on their land, because of course in those countries tourism is a dominant product, mm-hmm. in terms of employment and foreign exchange and so on, they would actually take a piece of land and offer it to a hotel investment company like Sandals and say, listen, mm-hmm. we have this property here. It's a disused hotel, or it's a beachside property. They will take the property and spend their capital. This is the private hotel here, to design and build a hotel there. And in exchange for that investment, they would get tax holidays. There would be a tax holiday or a duty holiday, or they'll get work permit concessions. So it's a question of something for something, quid pro quo. Put up this hotel, I'm creating a certain amount of employment, and I get that in return.
Because we know Sandals is not coming to us first. Sandals
went to they've been in other countries first, Barbados, St. Lucia.
What is the experience of those people like? I mean, are they happy with having put up a Sandals in their country?
Well, it's difficult, because what we're not getting, and what I've been unable to find is a proper overview of the whole thing. I've been looking. A proper overview and analysis of the whole thing. In other words, what has been the experience with all-inclusive hotels as a model? Mm-hmm. And Sandals is a particular hotelier, the most successful one within that scenario. It's been difficult, but of course we have stories. So we have the Antigua and Barbuda story with Premier Gaston Brown, and the Antigua and Barbuda sales tax ABST that had been withheld by Sandals, according to Premier Brown, illegally, and that was settled with a deferred prosecution agreement. They paid $1, and they were owing. They had not paid some $30 or $40 million. They just were able to not pay that and start paying the correct tax going forward. That was settled a few months ago. There was a situation in the Turks and Caicos where there was an allegation of some illicit payments made to a former premier who's now facing criminal charges. A fine was paid to settle that. I've not made much out of that, because that's a rather ambiguous sort of scenario. Mm-hmm. But I'm not really clear. To be frank, apart from employment, I'm not really clear that the Sandals model that I just described, the Caribbean model, is one that pays back those countries for their tax concessions. Our model, because our model is different. The Trinidad and Tobago model is...
Because we have a distinct Hilton, Hyatt...
And Tobago Hilton.
They were built on a different model.
Yeah, what has happened in Trinidad and Tobago is that we have had the capital, the money in the country, to build those hotels out of our treasury. So Trinidad Hilton, which is the one by the Savannah, was built in 62, mm-hmm. out of our treasury. Tobago Hilton, that we now know as Magdalena Grand, was built in 98-99, was opened in about 2000, out of our treasury.
Yeah, now it's...
And with some private sector participation, but mostly treasury funds. It's now wholly owned by the state,
Hyatt, same model.
And Hyatt, the same model.
Okay, now, for the listener,
yes,
it would seem counterintuitive that we spending our money would be better than just giving them the land and the tax concessions.
Yes.
So explain why that's not the case.
Well, the main point is that having built the hotels, Hilton, Tobago Hilton and Hyatt, we then enter management agreements with these hoteliers. And the point I am driving at is that we don't know what are the terms and conditions of those management agreements. The only one that has been published, and I believe it is published in error, is the Trinidad Hilton one, is published in the Registrar General's Department. What we don't also know about any of the three hotels is how are the contracts performed. Are the operators paying what they're supposed to pay? because the money is supposed to be split. Yeah. Are but they paying what they're supposed to pay? Are they paying the taxes they're supposed to pay? Do we know that?
Yeah, but I understand that some information has come out about Hyatt.
Yes, some information came out about Hyatt, which was interesting. It emerged, and it's funny how things emerge in this political storm we live in. We live in a perpetual political fight that sometimes seems silly like schoolboys. But we had a former attorney general, the one before the current one, who had the same initials as me, Anand Ramlogan. And Anand Ramlogan was a fella that people love to hate, and they have all kinds of opinions about him. But the reality is, that in a particular kind of a way, he was a remarkable fellow. He was a remarkably vengeful fellow. In a certain kind of way, he was a remarkably determined fellow. So he took up an action, a series of actions, and one of them was to embarrass Mr. Patrick Manning's main people. So on the 10th of June 2014, Mr. Ramlogan spoke in the Parliament, I think it was in the Senate, and Mr. Ramlogan spoke at length about an embarrassing situation that arose out of Patrick Manning's actions and Kola Hart's actions, the way he painted the picture, to do with Hyatt Regency. So that hotel was built during Mr. Manning's term in office. Mr. Kola Hart was head of UDCOT, and that hotel was opened in January of 2008. So it was opened roughly 10 and a half years ago, approaching 11 years ago. And Ramlogan was making the point that there was some defect in the documents. It was the same arrangement, the government paid to build it, the state paid to build it.
Right.
And Hyatt, which is an international brand, operated the hotel, and the money was supposed to be split in accordance with a particular formula, a secret formula.
Right.
There was some defect on our side in terms of how the paperwork was handled. Mm-hmm. What the defect is, it doesn't matter. But there was some defect, some mistake in how, terms of how we handled the paperwork. And because of that error, Hyatt was able to pay over no money for 6.5 years.
Wow.
So the Trinidad and Tobago Hyatt Regency at number 1 Dock Road that we've all been to at some kind of occasion, whether it's a wedding or a graduation or some kind of thing. A meal or something.
You know what? You'll be training your own class there.
Yeah. And some of us will work there. Not necessarily.
You could go there to hear Michael Guzman. So that's reason enough. But let me continue.
The point I'm making is that that hotel had been open for 6.5 years, yes, and it had been very successful. 10th of June 2014, we have to be faithful to the truth, we have to be faithful to the record, unlike, what was his name, Copeland?
Yeah.
We have to be faithful to the truth, because as I say, UB has their own record to uphold, yeah? But we'll get back to that just now. I want to make a statement about that before we end. The point I'm making is that for 6.5 years, no money was paid to Trinidad and Tobago State because of that defect on our side in the paperwork.
How much money was that?
Ramlogan actually took action.
Yeah.
To his credit, to recover the money, they hired a law firm, they took the correct line of argument and so on, and they were able to recover the money.
About how much?
$334 million TT dollars.
Okay.
Had been withheld by Hyatt. And the point I'm making is this: it's clear to me that Anand Ramlogan did all of that, his speech in Parliament and so on, to embarrass Mr. Manning, to embarrass Mr. Kola Hart, to score political stripes for himself and so on. That's part of how our politics plays.
Right.
But I am saying, were it not for those motivations, we would not have known. Because the historic record, PNM or UNC, is that those information about the underlying commercial arrangements of these large-scale state investments, those arrangements are deliberately obscured and concealed. And that is the reason why the current people who are proposing Sanders, who are trying to comfort the population by saying, you shouldn't worry, it's the same thing as Hilton in Trinidad, and it's the same thing as Hyatt, and those arrangements worked. How do we know they worked? Those claims are baseless. They're irresponsible. Mm. Okay?
Now, do we have a right to transparency?
Yes.
It's
a republic.
There we go.
Yes.
6224911 as the number to call.
Our grandparents and our parents suffer for this. I want better.
Let's call in. As I tell you, I mean, you know, this brother in studio right now is one of those guys who's taking on the absolute big fish. You know, we taking down Columbus Monument, yes, and you know, we have some scary gatekeepers and thing hanging around there. But when we start talking money in millions and billions, you know, it becomes a much more dangerous environment. Mm-hmm. And we have to say that, you know, kudos to Afro for his courage. In really, you know, being sort of almost like a lone wolf and going out there and battling on behalf of us while we're sleeping
in the public interest,
you know, to ensure that you know, business doesn't take place in our name that where there's no accountability and no transparency. So we thank Brother Raymond. 622-4911 as the number to call if you want to be part of the conversation tonight. And we're talking, of course, about sandals in Tobago.
Sure. So far, so good?
Yeah, man.
Good. Nice. There's so much more layers to this story, yeah?
Of course, of course.
The real sickening boy. I want to give you a little advice about the amount of money. If you get no calls, I'll put something in here to put the amount of money on the table.
Yeah.
Some amounts of money. Can I?
Yeah, sure.
Let me just make a point of context. Because we have a little break before we have any callers. Normally, when we discuss these projects, we discuss them in gross terms. I myself started off by talking about the Sandals project as being at $2.7, maybe $3 billion, yes? And the Hyatt Hotel, the capital sunk there is about $630 million. And so on and so on. So we have the kind of lump sum cost. We know the number of rooms. We know where the hotel is. And we know the kind of basic. But how the machine works inside, we don't know. And I want to give an example. I was speaking with someone who knows, who of course would have to remain nameless. But I was speaking with someone who knows, and they were telling me, they asked me, did I know how much money Hyatt made in a typical year? I had no idea. And the person said to me, and the particular year that person was talking about was 2016. The person said to me, from January to the end of October 2016, Hyatt made, now the whole capital of Hyatt is $630 million, the cost of designing and building it. Guess how much money they made in those 10 months? We talking.
Nah, boy. I mean, you talk about how much $300 million before over a 6-year period, right?
Yeah, yeah. The amount of money they made in 10 months, the turnover was about $650 million. So it could be, because of course November and December are big months with Christmas and thing, right? It could be as much as $700-800 million a year in revenue. But our gaze has been diverted to the normal bubble on commerce about the project took too long, 650, it should have been 425, and blah, blah, blah. The real funnel of money, the real torrent of money that is running through these enterprises is literally undisclosed to the public.
Yeah, and the question
and is... And Ram Logan kind of disclosed it in his egotistical thing on that occasion. Right, so right. We were able to get a glimpse.
Oh, so that was how much was supposed to come to us?
Yes, that was our portion, was 334.
334 over 6 years.
Yeah.
But we know that they're making perhaps six something.
Maybe 800.
Or 800 in 1 year.
Yeah. But you see, it's a kind of guessing cat and mouse kind of thing. But I don't believe it should be like that. Yes. I believe those investments are ours. Just like NIB, the money in the NIB is ours.
Yeah.
And the money in the treasury is ours. We should have a proper account of it and its rate of return and so on and so on. I don't think anything is outrageous about these demands.
That's right. Now,
the number to call is 622-4911 to get in on Indaba. We are looking at 10 more minutes to go.
Yeah, and now you there's another interesting issue that you raise here.
Yes.
You know, you have concluded that public property and public money are being placed at risk in this particular arrangement.
Yes.
And you don't believe, therefore, that certain types of concessions are due to this hotelier.
No, I don't believe so.
You have information that this hotelier is being given concessions that, you know, are outside of what is acceptable when this kind of arrangement is made.
Well, I mean, I'm quoting here from the director of operations of Sandals, a fellow called Jeremy Jones. He gave an interview on 11th of October, and Jeremy Jones actually said, and it's interesting to note it, he's a very particularly well-spoken, educated Jamaican professional man. And Jeremy Jones speaks in the past tense. He says, we think that the incentives that have been given by the government, not necessarily to operate, but to the country, in fact, he likes the incentives. So the incentives which have been given, I don't believe somebody of Jeremy Jones' pedigree would say have been given if it means that we were still discussing it. So in fact, unless Jeremy Jones has stepped outside his crease, Mr. Jeremy Jones, who's the director of Sandals, told us that the incentives have been given. And I don't believe it's proper. The other thing I want to say, Shabaka, because you're on a very, very, very active line here. We're using public land, valuable public land. We're using a vast amount of public money to make this investment. And when I ask the question, because I've gone to court, and I've been in a process writing to the Office of the Prime Minister to get a copy of the MOU, the Memorandum of Understanding that was signed with Sandals, which contains an outline of what the agreement is. I was told that I cannot get that because there's a confidentiality clause. So understand what's happening in this country, people. We live in a republic. We've had independence. We've had emancipation, it is alleged. And we've had Republic Day. And yet we have a situation with our public land being put aside for a project. Our scarce public money in vast amounts being put aside for a project. And when you ask for the details of the project, you're being told with a straight face, we can't tell you that because it's private. And as far as I'm concerned, that is wrong. It's as wrong as a Crick's biscuit. And I don't care who is listening. Faris Al-Rawi, you could be listening. Dr. Rawl, you could be listening. It is wrong. That is our land. That is our money. You are custodians. You are highly ranked, but you are public servants. You are custodians of our interest. And that those details need to be published.
Right. So we're coming down to the end now.
Sure.
So let's just go back to the initial question.
Sure, man.
You have published online on your own website, by the way, AfroRaymond.net.
Yes.
And I advise everybody to go and visit AfroRaymond.net if you're really concerned about your country and the future that it's heading in the 21st century. You know, you have to go on this brother. For those of you who don't know this brother, I mean, this brother looks like a Jerry Rawlins, you know.
No, please, not Jerry. Not Jerry. Please, don't do me the Jerry Rawlins thing.
He's a kind of gladiator, big, you know, ex-military man.
Yeah, well, that's true, yeah.
You know. Handsome brother. When you see him speak, though, he speaks with a kind of a scowl. He's very serious. But you say that all the ingredients for corruption are present.
Yes.
In this particular mix. Just give us a brief overview there before we close off.
Sure. What are the ingredients for corruption? But I had listed them and I just want to run through them quickly for listeners. And in fact, it's interesting, I listed them before in relation to the Invaders Bay scandal, which took place under the previous government, the People's Partnership. The first ingredient is extensive public assets come onto the market in unclear circumstances. The word I use is turbid. Those assets could include property, concessions, contracts, and jobs. The second one is access to the gatekeepers. And in these scenarios, some people have shocking access to the decision makers.
What do you mean by that exactly?
Well, there are people who can decide that this project is happening or is not happening. People in the cabinet, people in high authority. And there are investors who can get access to those people with a phone call. And there are other people who have proposals who cannot get their proposals approved, who cannot get access. And that is another signal, another red flag of corruption. Thirdly, you have conflicting and confusing versions of the project or proposal. As I said, the confusion is as persistent as it is deliberate. For example, we have the people at Sandals, Adam Stewart, saying that there's no secret, nothing is secret, the MOU has no secrets. When I write to the PS says to me, I can't tell it to you because Sandals say not to tell it to you. So which one is true? Okay. Thirdly, which falls right in line with the third one, blatant double standards and lying. We don't have to call names because everybody at the table is eating from that pot of food. Next one, ceremonial fluff, such as sod turning and ribbon cuttings. There's no intention whatsoever to give any proper account or statement of intentions. True transparency is evaded like taxes. And lastly, professional civil servants who are unable or unwilling to insist on the maintenance of minimum standards. Because quite simply, they lost their way, you know.
Yeah. So, Afra, to close.
Yes.
You have the newspaper sort of indicated that you were successful, but you're saying that there's a roadblock.
No. I wasn't successful. I was partially successful. Let me just clarify, please, Shabaka, if I may. The court case on the on the 11th of October, we had a hearing, a preliminary hearing, as ex parte, which means only myself and my attorneys were there before Justice Frank Sibasad at the High Court in San Fernando. Mm-hmm. And all that happened, the preliminary stage of a judicial review, the court has to decide whether there's enough material to proceed with a case. And it's called leave to proceed. And the court granted me leave to proceed. The court didn't order publication of anything.
So are you optimistic, brother?
I am fairly optimistic. I am fairly optimistic.
Victorious on behalf of the people of Trinidad
and Tobago. The case management hearing is the 29th of November, which is the first proper hearing at which the state's attorneys will be present. And we will get the ball rolling from there.
Okay, well, we look forward to hearing what comes out of that, my brother. Again, we want to thank you for, you know, your activism.
Someone was trying to call a little while ago, Shabaka. 6224911, because I think you've finished what you're saying. Oh, yes, this person is right there. Hi, caller. Go right ahead.
Yeah, Vanessa, Shabaka, and
Mr. Raymond.
Mr. Raymond.
Yes,
Mr.
Raymond.
You know, I have a question in my mind the longest while, and the conversation seemed to the answer in my question is that where does the state dislodge from the people of the country? You know, when does the people of the country does not become the state anymore?
Huh.
And then the state now belongs to the cabinet or the incumbent ruling party. Because sometimes I listen to certain conversations, that is how it keeps swinging and swinging to me, especially when they're talking about finances. You know, money, when money is involved. You know, just like you talk about the secrecy part.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so when it says that the people doesn't have the authority or the privilege to know what is going on with state funds. So you understand this is what men are talking about?
Absolutely.
Yeah, you know?
No, you're right.
So, yeah. And the other question is how did Mr. Ram Logan go about sourcing these funds from the higher management? And what role does the constabulary play in doing investigations if it is that people had to face criminal charges and be brought to court and all these different types of things? Mm-hmm. These are some of the things that, you know, kind of worry me.
All right. Thank you, brother.
Yeah.
Okay. I can answer that quickly to say to you that in the first case, it really does seem clear to me in some of the work I do and some of the perspectives that are forming, looking at what's happening in society, that on occasion of big, large-scale projects, it seems that the state could be acting in a manner that's contrary to the interests of the nation. And in fact, you could have the nation defined as the people. The people in the nation who live here, myself, yourself, listeners, and so on and so on. And the state is, in fact, the operational apparatus that is supposed to defend the rights of the nation and educate the nation and give us proper health care and development and so on. And sometimes they don't operate the way they should. So I agree with the first point the caller made. The second point in relation to what Ram Logan did, it was a commercial dispute. So there was no role for the police. It was a commercial dispute over this piece of paper. And the commercial dispute, there are mechanisms in a modern commercial contract, arbitration clauses, and those clauses were invoked by Ram Logan. They were invoked rather aggressively. He took the correct line of argument. He was a dynamic firm of lawyers, and he was able to prevail in the particular situation. So it was not really a case for the police. So that does not really come into what happened in this case. Mm-hmm. Nothing I'm talking about deals with that, really.
I think that beyond that, sure. Well, we are out of time now. Yeah. But I think the issue that is on everybody's mind is that you know, there is. We know that there's a lot of corruption taking place in this country. All the international bodies say so, everybody who's done reviews and so on, but there is no prosecution. But I think we don't have time for that one.
That's a big one. That's a big one.
But Afra, thank you for coming on tonight. And we want to keep up the good work.
Good.
All right, if you have just listened to us, this is In Daba, the place where knowledge grows, the place to find consensus. We want to thank you for joining us. And to invite you to join us again next week, Wednesday, from 8 to 9 for another edition of this special program. Good night. I'm your host, Shabaka Kambon, and I'm here with Vanessa Herbert, and it's been a pleasure.
There's Radio Talk and there's Intelligent Radio Discussion. Talk City 91.1 FM. Light years above the rest with quality discussion. No other radio station compares. At Talk City, we interview the newsmakers, give you incisive analysis, informed commentary, accurate and up-to-date matters. Choose Intelligent Radio. Talk City 91.1 FM. Your address for talk.
You're tuned to Talk City 91.1 FM. It's time for health and wellness here on Talk City 91.1 FM. Stay with us for an hour-long program hosted by Pastor Glenn John. Health and wellness, it's heard on Talk City on Wednesdays, Thursdays, and Fridays. Let's welcome you to today's edition.
79. Visit my website at pastorjohn26.com or listen live at 712-432-6822. Don't forget my Facebook page, Alkaline Pastor John. My friends, remember, I cannot call you. You have to call me at 516-286.